Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Kim Chesney, the author of The Illumination Code, Radical Intuition, and The Psychic Workshop. As the founder of Intuition Lab and the Create Festival, her work raises awareness and the importance of insight in the evolution of individual and world consciousness. Working for nearly 20 years in the tech sector, Kim has led initiatives with some of the top thought leaders, technology companies, and universities around the world. In this conversation, we look at the suppressed narratives and scientific theory around intuition, the mind-bending implications of quantum mechanics, and some practical ways to engage with these concepts in everyday life. You can find more side-by-side conversations at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. And if you'd like to connect with me about my services, please visit www.robertkwonhome.com. All right. Hi, Kim. It's so nice to see you on Side by Side Podcast. And also congratulations on your latest book, The Illumination Code.
Thanks.
I believe it was recently launched. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Robert. I'm excited to be here and talk about all this fun stuff with you.
Yeah. I love deep diving into text like this because there's a lot of directions we can go into. There's a lot of room that we can explore here. So yeah, to get started, you know, you talk about at the start of your book, your personal journey with exploring intuition and opening up to your world of understanding and possibility. So I would love to kind of have you share with listeners a little bit of the story that you told in the very beginning when you got a reading and later it actually came true and how that impacted you personally.
Yeah, it's really such a cool story. And I thought it would be a great way to start off this book because not only did this story sort of launch me on a lifelong pursuit of understanding how impossible things like premonitions and prophecies and things like that are actually possible, but it really launched my own spiritual awakening. So it was really key in the writing of this book. So it's a great story. I lived in England and I decided to go have my palms read by a gypsy palm reader one night. And we were with a bunch of friends. We had a great time. And I had this super fun reading. And she started telling me stuff about actual dates in the future when things were going to happen. And she said that in 1994, see, this was a very long time ago. In 1994, I was going to be in a foreign courtroom and I was going to be doing something important. But I'm like, okay, she gave me a date. This is just either going to come true or it's not going to come true, right? And sure enough, in 1994, I ended up on a federal jury duty case where I was sequestered, right? So that was really exciting. And then while I'm doing all this, the friends that I had gone to this gypsy with 30 years ago, I hadn't heard from them. I left England and there wasn't Facebook back then and we totally lost touch. Lo and behold, as I'm finishing this story, literally typing at my computer, finishing the story, I look down and one of those friends happened to reach out to me for the first time in 30 years on social media. Wow. So it really was this great sort of full circle thing, proving some of the stuff that we talk about in the book, that we remain entangled with people even when we're not with them in time and in place, and that all of the universe is connected and meaningful, and these powerful synchronicities happen in our life, and they're really a natural part of existence that we, you know, are starting to understand a little bit more now.
Absolutely. And I've gotten readings and things like that, and I've practiced being a reader as well. So I love the joy and the fun that can come from it in many ways. You know, it's not as spooky as people make it out to be.
Right.
So when you realize that the world was interconnected and that we had access to the fabric of all that is in some ways, for you, what became possible that previously maybe just seemed impossible or just wouldn't be something that you thought about? So like an example of mine would be, you know, as I did intuitive work, I started being able to like improvise music and compose. It's not that humans can't do that. It's that I just didn't think that that was me or that I had that skill based on my previous experience. So I'm curious if things like that happened for you as well.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of things can happen once we start to activate and empower our intuition. So the thing, when you start to get into your intuitive mindset and open up to it and start relying on it more and feeding that sort of flow, I do something in intuition lab, my school, called an intuition attunement, where, you know, we all have sort of pathways of intuition that we've, for one reason or another, mostly shut down. Like, our intuition speaks to us in a lot of ways. It speaks to us through our bodies, through our inner guidance system, through our callings and our the way we're moved with our heart and our inspiration and the flow, like you were talking about, and really our deep connection with life in the universe. The thing is, when we start to open up these pathways, different things can happen. And particularly in your case, if you open up this sort of creative pathway, the pathway of the heart, that's a great way to get out of writer's block or creative block, for one thing, if you are a creative person and you're stuck. But even if you aren't naturally a creative person, getting into your intuition can open that up and allow you to do more intuitive, creative work than you thought you could do, because this channel is suddenly open and inspiring you and guiding you and moving you from this beautiful inner place. So there's a lot of different things can happen. For me personally, like, it really expanded my consciousness. I was actually able to perceive things and perceive dimensions of reality that I couldn't perceive before. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear people like who see ghosts or orbs and things like that. These are really examples of how the dimensional shifts happen, and we can actually see things that are there. Typically, we can't see this stuff because our minds, you know, our bodies are just built with these five senses. And we actually perceive a very, very small portion of reality. The physical world that we're in and that we see and operate in every day is sort of like this sort of bubble, or this little beautiful simulation within this greater universe that our intuition can actually access. So when we start to expand that bubble, right, and expand it to more dimensional things, we can see more of what's around us invisibly all the time. So that's one of the cool things that can happen when you have an intuitive awakening.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I was sort of exploring how intuition fed my clairaudience, you know, as one of the clairs, maybe trying to, my personal story was trying to maybe reprogram the way I learned music and how to be a musician, where music comes from. And I had no idea how deep it went when I tried to, you know, pull at one thread, suddenly everything became an open question.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, as you know how that can happen. You have this line in the book. Actually, you use this word quite a bit. You say intuition is a quantum phenomenon, which is something that probably people in pop culture have heard that word more and more frequently. Why is that an important insight for you to explore?
Yeah, I think it's like a really big deal that we understand intuition that way. Intuition's really been marginalized traditionally for centuries. And really told that it was something woo-woo or didn't really exist, or it was something just for women. And it's really one of the most important things that we have as human beings. It's what differentiates us from computers, just machines, right? We have this magical power of intuition, and we understand that it is, in fact, a quantum phenomenon. It is, when you talk about quantum, right, we're talking about the microcosmic world. So 200 years ago, 500 years ago, we're living in the Newtonian world where we think everything operates under our laws of physics. Here, up is up, down is down, cause and effect. Seeing is believing. And then the quantum revolution came, and over the last 100 years really showed us that, sure, that works right here in this little pocket of reality that we're living in, but the greater universe operates on totally different laws of physics, completely different laws of physics. And all of the things that our little world says is impossible, in that world is totally possible. It's totally possible for particles to communicate when they're entangled on opposite ends of the universe. One will start to spin, and on the opposite side of the world, at least, is where we've tested it. Another one starts to spin even though they're nowhere near each other, right? So they're still entangled energetically. So they started to realize there is this kind of a connective field that unites all things that allow these impossible things to become an actual normal part of reality. So what we're seeing is all of the things, think of all the things you've thought of as supernatural in the past, all the mysteries, right? Things that were like spooky or we didn't understand. All of these things now are being explained by quantum physics. And this is a really exciting thing. And we realize this stuff isn't woo-woo. We just didn't understand it. We called it miracles because we didn't really understand what was going on. And we were afraid of it, and we marginalized it because we were afraid of the unknown and afraid of, you know, what power we actually might find there. So now that we realize that this is all a natural part of the universal laws of physics, and we realize that intuition is our connection to all of that. So it's like our rational thinking mind is sort of what gets us through this reality, but our intuitive mind is what accesses the greater, the limitless reality.
Yeah, I love the exploring the concepts, because I'm always curious to hear which concept people thought was the biggest mind F once you like really get into it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, when suddenly time is no longer linear, when we're in a, you know, multiverse of sorts and everything is happening all at once, as people say now, it can be quite a bit. So I'm curious for you, I guess, maybe at the earlier stages of discovery, what was the one, was there one where you were like, wait, hold on, are you serious? That was like maybe the hardest to wrap your mind around?
Well, I think that the thing that most people have the hardest time wrapping their mind around is time.
Yeah.
Because it's this notion, when you look at the quantum field and you understand the quantum universe, it's like they say, if quantum physics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet, right? It is so revolutionary in the way we view reality. And we're understanding that the real world's not the real world. There's no such thing as matter. Matter doesn't exist. Matter is a densification of energy, which we also know, right? Matter and energy E equal MC squared. Einstein, you know, taught us that. But beyond that, even if when you break down energy and matter, there's no such thing as real particles of anything. It just comes down to information and space and light. And so it's mind-blowing that we live in a world where we think we have matter and material things, but they're not those things. There really is no such thing as matter. And there's no such thing as time. So this is where things get, you know, really like mind-bending, because people think about, okay, so how is that? How does that happen, right? So we learn from relativity that everything is just related. We're individual points of consciousness. So the before and after is just an experience of our relative place in time and space, right? In reality, everything that's ever happened, will happen, or is happening now, is happening in the eternal now of the present moment. All of it is simultaneously, right? It's like that movie, Everything All at Once, Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's really what the universe is like. It's all happening, right? So there really is no past and no future, except for the way that we're weaving our own point of consciousness through that. You know, and this is physics. This isn't like me saying woo stuff. Like, this is what physics is telling us now too. But it really aligns with our intuition and the experiences that we have when you talk about things like past lives and alternate realities and all of that really fascinating stuff. But I think the big stopping point that we get to with this conversation, and the question I get time and time again, is how do we have free will and exercise our own personal manifestation process if everything's already happened? So wrapping our brains, and the answer makes it even crazier, because obviously what science tells us now is that we're living in a multiverse where every decision that we ever make splinters off on a new fractal of reality, right? Because the universe exists, all of this, everything that exists, exists in potentiality. And then it takes our consciousness to come in and collapse that wave, that potentiality, into existence, manifest it. So our consciousness sort of goes through our life manifesting on our own chosen path from all of these potentialities. But theoretically, there are a billion other potentialities in each of our lives that could interact in a billion ways. So it's really mind-bending to wrap our minds around what this multiverse actually could look like. So yeah, so it's exciting stuff. And it's really cool to explore with our intuition and kind of push ourselves to really think about what this universe is really made of.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up time, because I was going to ask, you know, generally speaking, where are people's biggest gaps and stops as far as really integrating these ideas into their everyday life? And I can imagine time being one of them. And it also makes me want to ask, how do we know what is coming up for us is from a higher level intuition versus how do we know we're just receiving something that is similar to our ego and judgments?
Yeah, really great question. And I also talk a lot about this in my last book, Radical Intuition, which really goes deep into how to identify intuition. What is intuition versus non-intuition? How do we recognize that one true voice in our head? Because we have a lot of voices in our head. That's the reality, right? There's so many. We have our inner critic. We have all the voices of the people that have conditioned us, right? So there's a lot of voices in our head, and we really need to learn how to align with that one true voice of our intuition, that true north. So one of the real characteristics of intuition is that it comes from a place of peace and power. So I say peace in terms of it's not emotional. It doesn't get us all off our center and freaked out and riled up, right? It comes with a peacefulness, but it's not a weak peacefulness. It's a powerful peacefulness. It's a peacefulness that is empowered and calls us forward and helps us to grow and expand and really live our truth in this world with confidence and self-awareness and self-love and all of those things. So getting into a high vibrational headspace is really important when you're working with your intuition. You never want to do intuition work when you're feeling sick or when you're feeling like you've had a bad day or you're feeling grumpy. During those days, right, you want to feed your soul, rejuvenate, uplift. You don't want to start working with your intuition when you're feeling in those low places, because then you can sort of attract the lower energy, the lower vibration ego stuff. When you really want to be in that high vibration place of your 360 view, a periscope view of your intuition that wants to guide you to the best, brightest place that's beyond your ego, right? It's not like a want or a need. It's your true path. And that's what your intuition will align you with. But you got to get in that good headspace to align with the good vibrations.
Yeah, it does make me think of treating intuitive practice as a really deliberate practice, meaning it doesn't look like just somebody stuck in rumination all day long. It is a deliberate practice with deliberate disciplines, and you apply it intentionally, right? Which is, I think, is super important to get some structure and support around it, or join a group, for example, a lab, for those reasons.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because groups are a great way to validate our intuition and work with other people, because it can be, very isolating, this journey, for a lot of people, because it can be hard to find people who really get intuition and believe in it, right? So it can be a solitary path. So I really encourage people to work with other people and share things with trusted friends. When we do our workshops, so we do all these exercises, we work with insight cards, we do all these different intuition strengthening practices, but the ultimate goal is to get it so that it just becomes second nature. So you just start living naturally, insightfully, and you start to be able to make decisions with your sort of inner guidance and your inner heart center just naturally, and recognizing it in everything you do. I like to think I've used my intuition 24/7. It's part of everything I do. But, there's times where you really need to tune in and get clarity, right? Sometimes you need to go that extra mile and do a meditation, do some card work, do some inner do one of your rituals to really get the guidance or reassurance that you need. Because sometimes we're not sure, I think I'm doing the right thing, but could really use a little pat on the back from the universe to let me know I'm making the right choice. So it can be good to pull a card or look for little signs and synchronicities that can sort of be those signposts that we need.
Yeah, I love looking for synchronicities and signs. It's become quite fun. It keeps my inner child curious, even in this adult, at times mad world, right? And in your book, you ask readers to practice looking for insights that show up out of nowhere. Can you describe a time when that happened for you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And that's the thing. So you can recognize an intuition because it just pops into your head with no apparent source. That's one of the real key defining factors of intuitive insight, is you don't think it up, right? So if you're sitting around just trying to solve a problem, just forget it. You're not using your intuition. You just, turn that over to your thinking mind. That's what's happening. But if you're, going for a walk and all of a sudden an idea pops in your head, I should take this new class. I should try this, right? So when it comes out of nowhere, it's really coming from somewhere. It's coming from the quantum field within you, right? So it's coming from your inner wisdom. So it's a really good key. It's a good metric. If something pops into your head out of the blue, those ideas that come to you are very, very 90% your intuition. So it's really important for us to start paying attention to those and honoring them instead of just blowing them off, which is what, you know, we've sort of been taught to do. It's like, oh, that was just a passing thought, whatever. That doesn't mean anything, but it probably does mean something, you know? So I really think that the more we start to listen to that voice, and a great story with that just happened last week when we did our book launch party. So my friend who showed up in my life from England that I told you about after 30 years. So we brought him into the book launch party. So I was like, here, I have a witness. He's going to tell you like, what made him reach out to me after 30 years? And he was just like, yeah, I just started thinking about you. And I don't know why, just like two entangled particles on the other sides of the planet. We were literally that. I started thinking about him. He started thinking about me. I actually looked him up on social media that summer, but I couldn't find him anywhere. And then he actually found me. All of this happening at the same time. Well, after our book launch party, I didn't hear from him a couple of days. And I was like, an email out to him. And I was worried. And he actually wrote back and he said, you know, Kim, he's like, and he wasn't someone who was really into intuition, by the way. So this was like, he's a professor. He's a, you know, very like PhD kind of person, right? So of course he likes it, intuitive things, but like this was a little bit new to him. He wasn't like super woo-woo. He said, Kim, I listened to what you said at the book launch party, and you know, it was Sunday and I was working and I just had this thought I should check in on my mom. And I didn't really want to, cause I had to drive like 45 minutes cause I guess they weren't picking up the phone, but he went and he checked on her. And it turns out she collapsed and she was really sick and she had pneumonia and I had to take her to the hospital. And he just wrote me this long letter and said, you know, I'm so glad that I listened to that. Because, you know, that could have saved her life, right? So it's something little like that. It's just like, just that little moment can be something really sacred and something really powerful. And he could have chosen to ignore that and kept doing his work, but he didn't. Yeah. So it's a great story.
No, there are so many times where, you know, where you're like, oh, should I pick up that phone or should I reach out to this person? And then we don't choose to do that. And there have been a couple instances where I was like, you know what? Sometimes that hesitation is me resisting my own intuition. I just double back on the question over and over again until it's kind of out of my energetic field. And you're sort of like, well, what was all that for? You know, what was the fear or the resistance about really? So yeah, I think sometimes following your curiosity, you know, within reason, it can be extremely magical and also just help you expand in your personal life or your business and whatnot.
Definitely.
So I have this quote that I pulled out and that you cite. It's from Irvin Laszlo. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a quote. We know that interactions between things in the physical world are mediated by energy. Energy can take many forms: kinetic, thermal, gravitational, electric, magnetic, nuclear, actual, or potential. But in all its forms, energy conveys an effect from one thing to another, from one place and one time to another place and another time. So I love talking about energy, but, you know, as a musician, I could even say working with sound waves and vibrational frequencies is quite normal. So how do vibrations and waveforms and things like that show up in the work that you're passionate about?
Yeah, and it's really, really important. And it's something that they're still really doing a lot of exploration around this too, to find out, you know, what are these sort of wavelengths that intuition is most accessible on? And, you know, I think it comes down to this idea that energy is really just information in motion, right? So information, you can look at it as the ground state. It's just sort of, that's what's there. And then once all the little sort of information particles or whatever start building into codes that turn into energy and that guide us and move us. And that's how the universe expands. So all of this happens on wavelengths and frequencies. And it's so cool because you really need to be on the same wavelength of an intuition to receive it. Right. So circling back to a little bit what we said earlier, when you get into that high vibration place of joy and light and happiness, one of the things I realized early on is I would have the most profound spiritual experiences on days when I was happy and I had a joyful day in my heart, even if I was just hanging out with friends. I was just feeling good because I'm on that wavelength, right? So we want to be on the wavelength of the intuition we want to get. So tuning ourselves to the frequency of love, the sort of alpha wave, I guess, is what, you know, we're kind of looking at it, the high vibration wave, high frequency wave of this sort of super conscious realm where intuition is naturally stored, is really ideal for informing our inner guidance. But there's also that, you know, we get to the lower brain waves of like delta and theta, and they're these big long waves, these big open waves, and they're the ones that come through sleep and relaxation. So we can get, why it was called dreams and sleep, we get backdoor intuition, right? You fall asleep and you get intuitive messages, visitations, insights will pop up in the, when you wake up in the middle of the night, you might have a revelation or something in your mind. So it can, you know, it can come through all of these places, but the real key is that we get out of that sort of middle zone, the sort of beta mind where the monkey mind is, where our mind's just going a mile a minute, right? So whatever, you know, frequency we're on, we want to get our minds out of the way. We can't be on the frequency of our active thinking mind because that repels our intuition. Our intuition can't get through because our like ego is like a bully, right? We're like, we are going to operate all your thoughts and we're going to dominate everything, right? It doesn't want to let little soft intuition come in and guide us because it's like a bully. So we have to get past our mind and move past our overthinking, that sort of toxic mind that it really, we can't stop looking at our phones. We can't stop obsessing over things. We just slow down, open up, relax, so our intuition can come in and inform us with those beautiful low frequency or high frequency waves.
Yeah, I've often heard manifesting is a process where you're already vibrating at a certain frequency at any given moment, but it's just like elevating your frequency is a way of manifesting it from a higher level, right? So it's often about working with your state of being. You know, that's how sound is created, is through vibration and impacting all the molecules around it. So I love that the same theory can apply to humans in our bodies at the same time. So it's funny learning about this from books, mostly for myself and some labs and groups and things like that, because I found the process of writing to be so valuable and powerful in all of this as a tool. And it's something that is relatively accessible to all, which I love, similar to meditation and breathing, right? Mm-hmm. So you obviously chose writing as one way to show your work and share your voice. Why?
I agree, yes.
Obviously. So obviously you're a supporter, but why is the tool and the practice of writing so good for intuitive development?
Yeah, right. I'm actually jealous of you because I've always wanted to be a musician because I think that music is magical for raising your vibration. And it's such an important tool for, you know, it can take us on these journeys. So I, you know, I defer to you musicians on that. And I'm grateful. I'm a big appreciator of music, even though I don't create it. But writing is valuable and anyone can do that. And journaling is such an important part. Even if you don't want to like, you know, talk about all your problems or do anything, you can just journal, you can write poetry, you can just kind of channel those intuitive thoughts and let them flow through your pen. So it's really one of the easiest ways to open up a sort of a portal from your intuition and bring that wisdom into the world through writing.
Yeah. And physically writing just really slows me down as someone who can be quite mental, right? So in learning about and studying all of the intuitive work and the quantum work, what would you say is the biggest untruth that is perpetuated by society or culture at large?
Yeah. That intuition. Yeah, I'm just like, don't get me started. intuition is scary or dangerous. That's something that I really am trying to raise awareness of in everything I do. As someone who, like, I have gone into every avenue of intuition you could imagine. And, you know, one of the things that I take away from it is this misconception. I really want to raise awareness of this misconception that we should be afraid of our intuition, or that we can, something bad can happen to us if we follow our intuition. The real key is, you know, staying in this good vibration place. And when you are really in the hands of your intuition and leading with light and love in your life, you are never in a safer place. Your intuition is synonymous with truth. Intuition is never going to lead you astray. It can never be wrong. We're wrong. We got it wrong. We didn't know what our intuition was. We confused it because we have these little tiny brains that really don't understand everything, right? But our intuition is that sacred guide. It's our connection to the universe and God and life, whatever word you use for that. So it is the most sacred of things and the most beautiful of things. So it's, you know, sort of become my life mission to help raise awareness of of this sacred nature of intuition, that it's not something that's scary or you're going to get possessed by demons and things like that. I'm not saying those things don't exist, but they're not, that's not, it doesn't have to do with intuition. That's something else, right? And intuition has got conflated with all of these other things that are mysteries. And so people are really afraid to trust themselves and trust that inner voice. And it's that fear that's holding so many of us back from real self-actualization and unity and coming together as people and really rising above all of this chaos that we're living in today.
I would almost say exploring one's intuition can help reduce the kind of going into conspiracy theory mindset, fear-mongering mindset in some ways, because if you follow your intuition, you're going to be asked to challenge yourself to find the answers for these things. It's going to ask you to look in places that maybe you were uncomfortable looking at. I found that to be actually more grounding potentially, because you can kind of empower yourself through your intuition. You don't necessarily have to be codependent on everybody else or absolutely, the rest of the universe, right? It's a really healthy dynamic. I would say has made me more accountable to myself, whereas some people think you're just going to, I don't know, just unravel in some way. But if anything, I found that I know my values and my principles and ethics way more now in being open and receptive to intuition.
Absolutely. When you follow your intuition, it's about following yourself, your true self, not following the world, not following your ego, right? It's about following your true, eternal, whole, abiding self that knows everything. That's the part of you that knows everything that's going on there and knows about the truths of the universe, that knows so much more than our limited three-dimensional minds that we're operating with. So when we get into that place of alignment with that, we become more independent, we become more self-sufficient, self-actualized. But in that process, we don't isolate. That's the beautiful thing about it. Even though we tune into ourselves, we actually become more one with all things. So it's this beautiful paradox. The more we connect with ourself, our true self, the more we actually connect with life and each other.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It makes me think about intuition in kids in some ways.
Yes.
And often we're the most in our natural state. We're not so much worried about the way people are judging us and perceiving us. And it's often before we get heavily conditioned by adults in our lives, right? So do you think like doing intuition practice can be something, for example, parents do with their children?
I absolutely think parents should encourage their children to be intuitive. That's part of our problem in Western society is that we beat intuition out of our kids. They go to school. We barely even teach the arts anymore. You know, we're lucky to get like music and art, which is like it's our foothold for intuition or the arts. But, you know, children have invisible friends. They have playmates. They play. They have the imagination. Imagination is the gateway to intuition, right? So all of this stuff is connected sort of with that left brain mindset that our intuition operates through. So really encouraging children to lean into their imagination and their creativity and their intuitive experiences instead of shutting those down or diminishing them or, you know, if your child says, oh, I have an invisible friend, not telling them they're crazy, like, oh, there's no such thing. Maybe talk to them about it, right? Mm-hmm. Get more information. Try to understand it. You know, there's something going on there. Children aren't just mindless blobs. They are intelligent, right? They are just small people who haven't figured out how to fully express themselves and work in this reality. But they're still highly intelligent. They're not going to just make stuff up out of nowhere. There's usually a reason why kids say things like this. So I really think it's important for our society to start embracing intuition at a younger age and really starting to foster it as a natural part of life.
Yeah. Like you say, like arts and humanities is constantly getting pummeled and disenfranchised. And right along there is like language communication, such an important practice for magic, manifesting, whatever you want to call it. And it is constantly just kind of being disregarded or like, you know, all of that. So I'm all for it. We are so in alignment with that. So doing intuitive work, you know, as we've mentioned, you say, you know, it's good to be in a good space yourself. So maybe if you're having an off day, sometimes it's more important to prioritize your body rather than some heavy duty intuitive work. So that makes me think about what is commonly known as like ascension symptoms. How can people kind of monitor or take care of themselves as they're diving into at times maybe very emotional space or very just new space and just make sure to take care of themselves a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I think that's an important conversation because that's also one of the misconceptions about our awakening is that it's just going to be this beautiful process of light where we're going to float up into the clouds and have peace and happiness, right? Yeah. That's not how it works. Right? And anyone who's gone through it knows it's not how it works. There's usually like, there's usually some tears and gnashing of teeth and all of this, right? Because we have to release, right? We got to release and work through that. So
yeah.
I think that really just recognizing that in the old days we called them growing pains, right? It's a kind of, the ascension symptoms are a growing pain. You have to move through this. You have to move through the darkness. You have to release the heaviness. And, you know, a lot of the emotional stuff, the trauma, the wounds that we've been carrying with us, and, you know, that's what keeps us on that stuck in those lower vibrations, the resentments, the unforgiveness, the hurts, the confusion, right? And when we're stuck in that state of mind, it can prevent us from really fully awakening into our full intuitive power. So yeah, so it's going to be messy in the beginning. And then there's always going to be times when you're sort of breaking through to the next level, right? This isn't just like a one-step thing. Like, oh, I woke up, here I am, life's great. Oh, no,
if only.
It keeps going, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It keeps going. Ideally, it should keep going, right? Because we keep on going a rung higher on the ladder. So, you know, we can look at those times of pain and suffering as sort of stepping stones to that ascended state of mind.
I mean, it does make me think about, I am very grateful for my connection to music. I had one recording session where I was feeling deeply, deeply upset, you know, like the ones where you're like sobbing and stuff. And I happened to be by my computer. I had it set up in a way where it's convenient enough for me to just hit record. And it was some kind of a recording that I don't think I can ever replicate again. You know, I'm glad I had the solitude. I was in a safe space. I had privacy. I could just let myself feel my emotions. And I also kind of knew that that's not like a regular everyday music recording practice. That is not the way that I would like to conduct that. Mm-hmm. However, when I make space for that, I'm very much grateful for it, as much as those moments can be very intense. So doing intuitive practice made me think about like ways I could manage myself, like in terms of energy, but also allowing moments like that to happen, which may bring some interesting surprises. You never know.
Yes. Yes. Magic can happen during these kind of cathartic moments, right? Yeah. It's a catharsis. Yeah. You're flowing, you're letting it out, but it's also beautiful, right? There's something about the human journey. And even though we go through pain and loss and all of those things, there is a beauty in the human heart and the way that we grow. So, and that's why I think when you're in the arts and you hear artists, you know, I'm an artist too. So I'll include myself. You'll hear people say, oh, you know, I create the best when I'm in pain. I can just go and write this poem, or I can draw this thing or create this song because I'm, what are you doing? You're transmuting that pain into power. You're taking that pain and turning it into something beautiful. So that's why art can be so therapeutic. And the intuitive aspect is really transmuting all of that heaviness and turning it into something that actually helps us to raise our vibration and ascend instead of holding us back.
Yeah. Sometimes I needed that kind of like not very intellectual way of understanding what's real and honest for me in that moment. And I just happened to have this little space with music, which I'm very grateful for. But writing very much can be that way. You know, when you hear some people just like, I don't know, I was struggling. And then one day it just all came out, you know, a whole chapter and whatnot. And, you know, I've definitely heard that as well. So yeah, so in thinking about getting more support and accountability and also just like connection and fun in all of this, you mentioned you run a lab and some offerings. Would you like to share a little bit more about ways that people can engage one-on-one or maybe in a more group setting?
Yeah, one of my favorite things in the world to do is teach intuition and hold intuition group workshops. Some people are a little shy. They don't want to work in groups because they're afraid that they don't have good enough intuition or that they won't get things right. But let me tell you that if you want to really jumpstart your intuition and take it to the next level, working with a group is the best way to do it. You'll make the best friends. You will find kindred spirits on the journey and really people that you can be honest with and open with as you experiment with your intuition and learn how it speaks to you and learn to trust it, right? Because if you're if you're in a group setting or with someone and you're afraid to share your intuition, well, what does that say? It says you're not trusting it yet. So my goal is to teach everyone to trust their intuition 24/7, to recognize it and be sure of it. And when it comes, to not be like, I'm afraid to say something or follow it. I want to trust it. So my job, the way I look at it, is to help people to learn to trust their intuition so they can use it in everything they do. It makes your everything better. It doesn't matter if it's relationships, your job, your art, your spiritual practice. Intuition makes it all better. So really getting into that state of trust with intuition is my goal for people. So at Intuition Lab, we offer year-round classes and workshops to play with your intuition. I call it a lab because we explore and we have different workshops to really, we do stuff like stuff with remote viewings and past life and like really cool inner frontier explorations as well.
You know, that makes me think about something that actually, again, doing this type of work really made me explore, which is once you realize we're all connected, you know, the energy is often very fluid between us, that things like remote viewing is possible. And very quickly, the first thought I said was like, oh, it's important to understand this stuff because it may be fun for me to remote view. That also means others can remote view me. So you made me think about, you know, basically kind of like ethics and kind of what is it all for and taking care of ourselves. So it kind of made me think about things like boundaries in a way that I had never considered before. But it wound up being very empowering rather than like living in fear, because you could just sort of like do certain practices to support your energy in that way. So yeah, I wanted to bring that up as well, because it made me think about energy and ethics a lot in a good way.
Well, why do you think it's been suppressed by authorities for so long? Because people are afraid of it. And you know, that was the big issue with the psychic spy programs that went on in the 80s and 90s with, I think, the Soviet Union and, you know, US Project Stargate, where the government spent over $20 million for 20 years with remote viewing, psychic spying, and really got some great results. So the big question then, when you look at it that way, can we imagine a world without secrets? Right? That's really the big question about how far we go with intuition. Can we imagine a world without secrets? And there's a reason why, in my mind, why this intuitive stuff has got shut down, marginalized, because it can be threatening. If governments need secrets, right? You know, people need secrets. And if we need secrets, we don't want people intuitively snooping into our secrets. When we think about our personal lives, when we apply that to our personal lives, and because all change starts at home, we have to be the change. Just say, what secrets do we have? What do I care if someone's remote viewing? I really don't care if anyone's remote viewing me. Like, what are they? They're going to see me sitting, working at my desk or hanging out with my kids, or I have nothing to hide. Right. And that's really becomes the underpinning, is are we able to start building lives that we have nothing to hide? Can we be 100% authentic in everything we do? Right. So these are big questions. And, I think as a society, we're not there yet. It's going to take time till we get to that place, if we get to that place. But I think it's a really real goal that, you know, we should strive for, is realizing that it doesn't have to be, we don't have to be separate egos working against each other, trying to get the next leg up. When we live by our intuition, we can live in unison together, working together. And so it's a real mindset shift. And obviously, you know, in terms of ethics, like, we don't want to go using our intuition to snoop around in people's private lives. But at the end of the day, everything we do is recorded in the Akashic field anyway. There really is no such thing as privacy. It's like the government. They're spying on our phones. They're listening to us. Do we care? What do we have to hide? Right? The question is going to be, we have to be able to be authentic and not really honor this sort of sense of secrecy that we've been given as human beings, because we're able to lie and we're able to withhold information from each other. So it's a big discussion. You know, it's probably deeper than all this we could get into here today. But I do think, you know, aiming for that sort of authenticity in our own lives is a good first step. You'll know, then we can attract that and help others to create it too, like one person at a time.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the idea of what if there's a world with no secrets, which would be a world where everyone's sort of interconnected the way that you've been talking about. I do think this is a longer discussion for sure. Yeah, so that's on me to bring it up at the end, but just open this can of worms. But
yeah, it's a big can of worms. It really is. But you know, that's the long term, right? So I feel like we don't, need to worry about that so much now because we're not there yet. We're still here trying to figure out how to use our intuition in its first step. Someday when we get there, naturally we can deal with those things. But right now we're just using them in our own lives and start making that change and doing the best that we can to be authentic and whole and unified in our actions and thoughts.
Well, you have sort of touched on this here and there in our conversation today, which thank you for being willing to deep dive in, you know, at times maybe subjects that's kind of difficult to just like get started in. But I'm curious about what you think, especially right now in 2024, what the biggest cost or consequence of people refusing or not tuning into their intuition?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind really is just sort of the confusion that we have. And the division that we have between each other. I think that, you know, right now it feels like we're living in a world on fire where everybody's fighting with everybody else. And I think part of that is our lack of ability to have empathy with each other and to really connect with each other and see our similarities more than we see our differences. So our intuition really calls us to unity, to recognize that we're all coming from the same place and we're actually all going to the same place, and all this static and fighting and trying to get ahead and be first and best and all of this stuff that's part of the human race, right? Like, look at what we're called. It's the human race. It even seems like a race. We've put our egos forward and enough is never enough. So, you know, I think if, you know, by tuning into our intuition, it will allow us to counter that a little bit and to bring some peace and to bring some unity and some good vibes.
You make me think about the idea that I've said, which is like, life is not a process of elimination. You know, you don't ascend or, you know, by kind of becoming the only one who's there. Right.
Right. So, there's enough room for everyone, right? Yeah. There's room for everyone. And we live in a world of limited resources. So we have this mindset of, well, I got to get my share, or I've got to get more than someone else. And it just really creates a distraction to our true spiritual journey, which is quite the opposite of that.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. And
thank you.
Yeah, I hope we get to do this again sometime and deep dive a little bit more about intuition. And I'm really curious about some of your offerings. So for people who are interested in that, real quickly, where can they find you and connect with you?
Yeah, you can visit my website, kimchesney.com. And there I actually have a free intuition awakening guide that you can download. I have a free intuition and affinity test you can download to find out what is your intuitive type. And I also have my insight cards. I have my online deck is there, and you can practice with those for free too. So lots of free intuitive resources there. You can also check out my classes and workshops at intuition-lab.com, and all are welcome. You don't have no experience necessary. Just bring yourself.
Well, thank you. And I hope many people get to join the space and start practicing in this kind of new way of being with their intellect and their intelligence. So thank you for your time today, Kim.
Yeah, thank you. Great conversation. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks, Robert.